This episode is brought to you by Oracle. AI may be important, but it needs a lot of processing speed, and that gets expensive fast. Upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive at oracle.com/enhance.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Friday, January 26th. I'm Alex Osola for The Wall Street Journal. Coming up on today's show, using rockets to blast satellites into space is something we've been able to do for decades. But moving cargo around in space? That's a whole new frontier. WSJ reporter Micah Maidenberg tells us about the companies creating vehicles to do this and how soon they could go into action. And then, Charter Communications may be one of the biggest telecom companies in the U.S., but it's gotten much more of the funding from the Federal Affordable Connectivity Program than its competitors. Now, regulators are looking into Charter's use of the program. We'll find out what this means for Charter and for the future of the program from WSJ tech policy reporter Ryan Tracy. But first, it can take years to assemble a complex satellite. But once it's in space, there's not a lot people can do if something goes wrong. That could soon change with the deployment of orbital transfer vehicles, spacecraft designed to move stuff around within space, like semi-trucks do here on Earth. Here to tell us more is WSJ reporter Micah Maidenberg. Micah, why is it important to be able to move things around in space?
Well, getting to space is half the battle. Blasting a satellite, a cargo vehicle, some other kind of payload into space is something that we've been doing for many decades. And being able to take a vehicle that is launched on a rocket and having like more power to zip it around to another orbit, to further out in space, to the moon, that hasn't really been developed. And being able to do it is important because you could design payloads, design satellites in a very different way. And you could have just a more robust in-space transportation network, different types of vehicles with different uses, not that dissimilar from how here on Earth, we have different expectations and different uses for container ships, for cargo vans, for UPS trucks, for Uber.
So when you say move stuff around, what exactly are these orbital transfer vehicles, like the semi-trucks of space, moving?
Satellites. That's a big part of it. There are commercial communication satellites. There are commercial, potentially imagery satellites that could be used. And certainly there's a government market sort of information here. The military in particular is interested in having the ability to potentially move satellites around, to repair them, to offer other services, because some of these satellites are really expensive and really complicated and take years to sort of build on the ground. There also could be other kinds of payloads and vehicles that could be zipped around on these orbital transfer vehicles in the future, carrying cargo, perhaps crews. Some of that work is still being thought out and developed.
Is this something we're able to do now? And if so, how would the technology have to advance to have this new mature world of orbital transfer vehicles out there?
Yes, there are vehicles that get launched on top of rockets and provide in-space transportation. Sometimes they're called kick stages. Kick stages are not unknown and are part of the kind of multi-tiered, multi-stage like rocket launch architectures that have been around for quite some time. But now some of these vehicles could live in space and other vehicles that are under development could provide transportation more on call, if you will.
What are some of the companies working on this?
It runs the gamut. You have traditional aerospace companies that are in the mix here, like Northrop Grumman. Jeff Bezos' space company, Blue Origin, is developing a transfer vehicle. And there are some really interesting startup companies that are working on this too. One is called Impulse Space. They're based in Southern California and run by a very prominent former SpaceX engineer. Another one is called Argo Space, which also has some SpaceX heritage in their founder and executive ranks.
What is the timeline for when some of these might go into use?
Soon, some vehicles are already in space or have already been in space. Impulse had its first Mira vehicle. That's one of their orbital transfer vehicles launched last November. Northrop Grumman has been pushing to get its first MRV, mission extension vehicle, that can provide some transportation capability up relatively soon.
That was our reporter, Micah Maidenberg. Coming up, how did one internet provider receive nearly a quarter of funds allocated for a federal program? That's after the break.
This episode is brought to you by Oracle. AI may be important, but it needs a lot of processing speed, and that gets expensive fast. Upgrade to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is the single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. Do more and spend less, like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic. Take a free test drive at oracle.com/enhance.
Charter Communications is one of the biggest cable companies in the U.S. It's got around 30 million customers nationwide for its TV, phone, and increasingly, internet services. Over the past few years, Charter has also been one of the biggest recipients of funds from the Affordable Connectivity Program, intended to help more low-income Americans pay for internet service. But Charter is now coming under scrutiny from federal regulators. Here to tell us more is WSJ tech policy reporter Ryan Tracy. Ryan, tell me a bit more about the program. What's its goal? How does it work?
This program dates back to COVID, where Congress basically reached this almost unanimous consensus that as a country, we are not okay with people not having access to the internet anymore. It's just a lot of that on getting the wires or the service to people that need it in rural areas that don't even have access to it. But then there's also this other piece of the quote unquote digital divide, which is sometimes people have the opportunity to get internet service, but they can't afford to pay for it for whatever reason. And so that's what this program is supposed to fill in. It gives you up to $30 per month if you meet certain criteria, like if you get food stamps already, for example, or if your income is less than twice the federal poverty level, you're eligible. And you sign up through your internet service provider, and then you get this discount on your bill. And oftentimes, it's actually free. And you know, you can use it for a phone or home internet.
And the money doesn't go to individual internet users. It goes to the telecom companies, right?
Right. So the people who signed up don't get a check from the government. What they get is a discount on their bill.
So advocates for this program, what have they said about how it works and why it works?
They say that a lot of families are in this situation where they can afford internet service sometimes, but not all the time. They may fall behind on their payments. So if there could just be a discount every month, that's just tremendously helpful to these families because, as we know, you need internet these days.
Okay, and what have critics said about it?
Well, one of the big debates is around how many of the people who are eligible for this program really need this government check to keep their internet turned on. How many of these people didn't have internet access at all before, and then this program got them to sign up? And what's come out as the program has gone along is that the large majority of people, you know, potentially like 80% or so, had some form of internet access before and are not necessarily new to the internet. And so there's a debate going on in DC right now about, does that mean this program is working, or does that mean that a lot of people are just taking this money when they don't really need it? And so it's this question of, well, what's the right amount of government help and how much money should taxpayers be spending on this? So we're at the moment right now where this program is about to run out of money. Sometime in May, there's going to be no dollars left in the kitty. Congress appropriated $14 billion originally. That was a little over 2 years ago. Now there's this question of, should we extend this program and how much more money should we put into it? And also, do we need to change some of the requirements? Are the eligibility requirements too broad? By the way, Charter received $3 billion through the Affordable Connectivity Program and an earlier version of the program called the Emergency Broadband Benefit.
How does that compare to other telecoms?
It's a lot more than any other company has gotten. So $3 billion is about 25% of the money that's been paid out so far, which is a total of nearly $13 billion. And it's also three times as much as the number two company. So that suggests, you know, something's setting Charter apart from its peers on this.
Yeah. Why did it receive so much?
What Charter says is, hey, look, we're doing what the government asked us to do. There's actually requirements in the law that say companies have to promote this program. And when someone renews their subscription, they have to tell them about this program. And so we've been pushing it pretty hard. Another thing that makes Charter distinctive is they're one of the only large companies that has their own process for verifying whether customers who sign up are actually eligible to get this government assistance. And there is a government-provided way to do that called the National Verifier. Charter has its own way of doing that, and they've had it for years, even before this program existed, because they had this like low-income program in place already. And our sources tell us that the Federal Communications Commission, the agency that administers this program, has been looking into this and whether its in-house process for verifying whether people are eligible is actually doing that. And we found some evidence, including a warning letter that Charter got from the FCC Inspector General's office, that suggests that there were at least some instances where Charter signed up people with names that weren't real names or had one person getting the benefit twice and that kind of stuff. Charter says that wasn't a systematic problem, that those were like relatively isolated cases. The FCC has been looking at Charter since last year. People familiar with the matter have told us that. And that is ongoing, is our understanding. And there hasn't really been any resolution of that, so we'll have to see where that lands. But you know, this whole program is under scrutiny right now.
That was our tech policy reporter, Ryan Tracy. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang. I'm your host, Alex Osola. Our supervising producer is Catherine Millsop. Our development producer is Aisha Al-Muslim. Scott Salloway and Chris Zinsley are the deputy editors, and Falana Patterson is the Wall Street Journal's head of news audio. We'll be back this afternoon with our TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.